The following is a presentation of the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence and WCWP. Welcome to Project Independence and You.
Hello and welcome indeed to Project Independence and You, the show that is organized by and for the older residents of our community. Evelyn Roth, your host. Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. Our mission, as established by our supervisor John Kamen and our town council, is to assist and support the older residents of our town to remain in their own homes and their own familiar intergenerational communities healthfully and independently for as long as they wish. And we know that upwards of 95% of aged Americans want to remain in their own homes as they grow older rather than go into some alternative residential placement. It's good for them and it's good for society as a whole when you look at the cost of maintaining someone in a nursing home for a year compared with the costs of the Project Independence programs. Ours are just a fraction of that, possibly upwards of $100,000 a person to be in a nursing home. So we're delighted with our program and our partnership here with WCWP 88.1 FM. You can also listen to the show on their website, wcwp.org. You can call us and talk with our guests live by dialing 516-299-2030. And if you have any questions about anything you've heard after the show, call 311 within the town of North Hempstead or 869-6311 outside the town. Project Independence and You has a relatively new initiative here, and we invite a different co-host for our radio program every week from among the members of Project Independence, the older residents of our community. And our host today is someone who has been a guest on the show, who is very active with Project Independence, and who, in fact, spearheaded our whole radio initiative. And he is Jerry Pitzman. He is a resident of Great Neck and a member of our Great Neck Advisory Committee. Welcome, Jerry.
Thank you very much, Evelyn.
Jerry, why don't you just talk a little bit about the way in which you kind of provided the impetus for this radio initiative?
Well, it came from two separate directions. Older people tend to listen to radio to fill up space during the day, and I felt it was appropriate to have a radio program that would fill in this time that would be directed towards the activities and interests these people had. At the same time, I became aware that the FCC was issuing what they call drop-in low-wattage FM station licenses, and that perhaps we could do this. I spoke with Evelyn, and we looked at it, and fortuitously there was a young intern this past summer who really grabbed hold of this and looked
around. And, of course,
he
discovered that the FCC was no longer issuing these licenses.
Right, there was a hiatus there, exactly.
We were getting ready to apply, right.
Right, he found the people here at CW Post were gracious hosts who, in effect, have given us 2 hours on Friday to get started. And when I looked at the amount of effort that went into doing 2 hours, I wonder whether we were really ready to be on the air 5 days a week for 4 hours. But
amen, Jerry.
It's a learning process for us. And who knows, someday, and I hope the not-too-distant future, we'll be able to have our own station somewhere and fill it with maybe 20 hours of programming that's directed making life simpler and assisting seniors in living here in the great town of North Hempstead.
Well, Jerry, you're a lot more ambitious than I am. I'm very happy here at WCWP with our 2 hour slot,
right,
which, as you point out, is not easy to fill every week, but we have great producers,
yeah,
Christina Fennell and Michelle Stern.
And they're doing most of the work, right?
Yeah, yeah. I do want to welcome our first guest this morning, and he is Jeff Rosenfeld, PhD. Jeff is the former director of Hofstra University's gerontology program, and he has just, with a co-author, come out with beautiful book called Unassisted Living. Jeffrey, welcome to the show. Why don't you first tell us a little bit about the study of gerontology?
I'd be happy to. Good morning, Evelyn. Good morning, Jerry. And good morning to all of our friends out there in listeners of WCWP. I am a gerontologist. Let me mention that there's a big, big difference, and probably a very important difference, between gerontology and geriatrics. Geriatrics, which is probably more familiar to your listeners, is the medical piece. It looks at illness, physical, emotional, biological. Gerontology, which often celebrates active aging, is the piece that looks at the psychological, the sociological, and the demographic pieces of aging. And I'd like to think that we are an energized and a growing stability on aging in the world today.
Well, thank you.
Gerontology is newer, but catching up quickly.
Could I ask you a question?
Sure, Jerry.
You know, one of the things that we try to do here in the town is to assist people in staying in their homes, and your topic, of course, is assisted living. I don't believe there's any real conflict, but could you perhaps tell us what you mean by unassisted living?
I will be happy to. Let me mention first that within gerontology, I am an environmental gerontologist. That's my specialty. And environmental gerontology looks at the interplay between aging and the built environment. Mm-hmm. So I who celebrates architecture, interior design, product design, all of which will get me to an answer. Unassisted living. The question was, what is unassisted living?
Right.
Unassisted living, as I understand it, is the opportunity to remain where you choose to live as long as you choose, and to live in a healthy, safe, and secure manner in that place. It's not enough to just be in a place. You have to be safe. You have to be secure, and most important, you have to be happy. Aging in place also happens in prisons, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about celebrating home and community.
Well, to contrast unassisted living with assisted living,
That's my pleasure, Evelyn. assisted living, which in the United States has a very particular meaning, now involves moving into residential settings where you pay, usually monthly, occasionally annually, to have assistance with the functions of daily living. But what you've done for most people is to give up your own home. And in exchange, you move into a different, usually a smaller residence, and you are cared for more. You have the option of being more independent, but by and large, what you're paying for is space in a residence where there are caregivers. Unassisted living means that you are able to age in place, and you are able to construct for yourself a collection of people who can help you. But the joy of it is that you have the power and the right to put
that
together.
So that is really consistent with this project, which is to help stay in their homes.
Oh, yeah.
So there was no difference there whatsoever.
No, I think that, that Project Independence is an important step forward by creating an alternative to assisted living and long-term nursing care, and that's what's so important about Project Independence.
Jeff, the promotional material for your book, which, again, I say is a beautiful book that's just one illustrated with pictures of different housing options for living in later life. The promotional material says that this is the first book to explore the alternatives to the traditional senior housing that's been rejected by boomers determined to remain active and engaged socially, physically, and politically.
I'd also like to add that it's being rejected by a lot of seniors, not just boomers who are rejecting it. But if you look at vacancy rates,
even past boomers,
you'll see that a number of seniors are having second thoughts about moving into these places. And what fascinates me is that this should have happened years ago. Mm. People should have understood years ago that there are better, more fulfilling ways to live.
You know, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jerry.
You know, here in the town of North Hempstead, we're pretty well built out. And you know, I looked at the book very quickly before the program started, and the houses are absolutely beautiful, and I'd love to live in them. But most of the seniors here can't really do that. In other words, I don't think you could find a lot in Great Neck where you could build any of these houses today. So, you know, what could seniors do who want to stay in their homes? Would you talk about modifications that make this possible in an existing home? For example, I live in a house that's 70 years old. What could I do to make it more livable as I age in place?
Jerry, somebody once asked Julia Child, what am I going to do with your cookbook? I can't possibly make all of these recipes. I couldn't eat all of this food. I wouldn't know what to do with it. And Julia Child said, this cookbook is aspirational, meaning
right.
You don't have to cook everything, but this is a book that can give you ideas.
Okay. Right.
And I'd like to think that my book, Unassisted Living, is very much the same. You don't have to be living in any of these houses to get ideas about what you can do with and for your own home to make it safer but more interesting at the same time. So I think it's naive to expect seniors to build new homes for themselves, but I think it's very exciting to think that seniors can think about ways to make their own homes a little bit safer and a lot more exciting. Mm. And that's what you can get from my book on assisted living, is ideas galore.
Jeff, we have about another minute left, and I hope you can stay with us for the next minute, because I want to ask you about the fact that you and your co-author, Wid Chapman, have identified six different lifestyles in the boomer generation, and I would like you to talk about that, and also to talk a little bit more about how we age in place in our homes that, as Jerry pointed out, we've been living in for 30, 40, 50 years, which is the case for most of the folks in the town of North Hempstead. And there are, in the town of North Hempstead, 50,000 individuals who are age 60 or over, and they are living in 37,000 households just within our town. And so we have a very, very large audience. Please stay tuned to Project Independence and You. This is your host, Evelyn Roth, and we will be right back with Jeffrey Rosenfeld. Hi there, and welcome back to Project Independence and You. This is Evelyn Roth, your host. My co-host today is Jerry Peretzman from Great Neck, a Project Independence member. And our guest is Jeff Rosenfeld, who is the former director of Hofstra University's gerontology program and the author, along with Wid Chapman, of a beautiful new book called Unassisted Living, Ageless Homes, Later Life. And Jeff, as we end the segment, we were talking about your six different lifestyles pertaining to seniors. So tell us a little bit about those.
I'll be happy to, Evelyn. As I've said, the book is called Unassisted Living, Ageless Homes for Later Life. And if your listeners are interested, it's published by Monticelli Press and distributed by Random House and available at a Barnes & Noble near you. I'm going to quickly mention the lifestyles.
And on Amazon.
Okay, we're not really not supposed to be doing commercials. So.
The lifestyles that are particularly relevant for my friends in the town of North Hempstead would be affordable but never boring, which clearly speaks to the goal of staying where you are, making life more interesting, but keeping the changes affordable. Another chapter is called Ageless Homes for Later Life. It's a chapter which celebrates universal design and making changes in the home which are going to stay with you and be helpful and useful as you get older. There's a chapter called In the Company of Friends, which celebrates the idea that you need to make connections, architectural, structural connections that make it easier for friends to live near one another and visit one another. So the chapter is called In the Company of Friends, and it celebrates senior co-housing. There's a chapter called Working and Healing from Home, because more and more older people are beginning to understand that home is a place where you can both do business and have an enterprise of your own, and also a place to heal from a variety of illnesses. And as it's come up recently, healing not just from physical disabilities, from emotional changes as well, from the traumas in your life. The other chapters in the book, which also deal with unassisted living, are a little bit more they require a little more migration. One is called Off the Grid. Wid and I make the point that today's older people are the first generation of older people who can live in isolated, far-off places if they wish. That's never been the case before.
Because
there was never enough technology to connect them to healthcare or pharmacy. But with the advent of telemedicine and telepharmacy, it's now possible to live on a ranch in Utah, and as one of the houses in my book illustrates, and still be connected to your healthcare providers back east. So Off the Grid is a new option, probably not for my friends in the town of Hempstead, but a new and interesting option
only
as well.
We have hurricanes.
There you go. And finally, Three Generations Together. Again, slightly off topic, but absolutely fascinating. What Wid and I have discovered is that there's a new and very exciting trend for boomers and older people to be exploring the idea of living in compounds with other generations in their own family.
Rediscovered.
Yeah, rediscovered. I'll stand corrected. Rediscovered, yeah. But grandparents, children, and grandchildren living together. And I'm absolutely fascinated, and I'm very heartened by that, because...
Was that for economic reasons in these times, or is it just that there's a new sense of family cohesiveness?
I think that it's happening now for both reasons. When I was writing the book, it was more for social cohesiveness, but what we're seeing today are more people who need to be living at home and in extended families for financial reasons. Yeah. And That's a whole topic in
sometimes
and of itself.
Grandma and Grandpa have the house, right?
Grandma and Grandpa have
no
the house.
No mortgage on it. Right.
And they become very important in maintaining the family dynamic.
I know we have a few people in the studio listening to the show, and I know that there are several of us who are living in a three-generational household, as I look over the group here, and that includes myself. And it's wonderful to be in the same home with my grandchildren and be part of their life and their growth and their development and to be able to help.
Evelyn, your grandchildren are very lucky to be having that experience. It hasn't been a typical experience, but it's a wonderful experience.
Well, it certainly is. Jeff, you went very quickly over the topic of universal design. Could you explain universal design?
I'd be happy to. Universal design refers to the idea that you can design a room or a product so that it continues to be useful throughout one's life. A product that's universally designed will work just as well if you are a teenager or if you are a middle-aged person or if you're in later life. What I'm thinking of as I try to think of examples would be a handle on a door rather than a round doorknob. A handle works just as well for a younger person as it does for a person who's older and might have arthritis. And so by creating and then using that kind of doorknob, you're making the room workable and livable for people of any age. That's an example of universal
design.
And there
are some municipalities that are requiring that with new construction. Things like studs in the wall in the bathroom so that later on you can install grab bars and you don't have to get to the point where you have to break through the whole wall and in order to do that.
I'd like to make a quick point about universal design, though.
Please.
It's not the be-all and the end-all. It's a really good start. But for me, the model is Sweden, where in Swedish housing, there are typically three different levels of support built into every apartment. And when you move in, you pay for level number one, that's the move-in price. And as you get older and more frail, you can pay more for additional levels of support and additional levels of design.
Well, Swedish models have always been very, very popular in this country. Jeff, could you, in the little time that we have left, talk a little bit about retrofitting homes for aging in place in our area, town of North Hempstead, town of Oyster Bay, for our listeners?
I'd be happy to. And by the way, for all of my friends out there, it's really important to remember that the time to retrofit your home is before you need to. If you are ever in Home Depot or Lowe's, you'll see people who are looking because a family member has already fallen and now they have to rethink the bathroom or the kitchen or the bedroom. You don't want to be in that situation. You want to be retrofitting before the accidents happen. One thing that you can do, which is not exactly a retrofit, but which is really, really easy, is to rethink scatter rugs. I think that they're especially safe. You should do away with them, but if you've got to have scatter rugs, you should tape them to the floor so that they don't scatter. They can be decorative. They'll warm your feet when you get out of bed. But you'd be amazed, Evelyn and Jerry, at how many accidents happen because people step onto scatter rugs and the rug skids and they fall. So taping it with a two-sided tape to the floor beneath the rug or getting rid of scatter rugs is an easy no-brainer, and it's an example of the very first basic level of retrofitting. Also, elevators. Yeah.
Jeff, do you know of any state or federal programs that would help people with the expense of retrofitting?
I don't think I have enough time to get into that. I can talk to your listeners if they want to phone in, but it's just a great
Jerry, Project Independence can help our folks with that. They can call 311 within the town or 869-6311 outside of the town.
Sure.
We have some people that we work with that do some minor home repairs and larger home modifications, and we can give them information about funding programs.
Also, Nassau County Department of Services for the Aging.
Okay, so we sort of interrupted you, but you were talking about retrofitting.
I was talking about retrofitting, and I was if I had another hour, I would start with the most basic, easily doable retrofits, and then get into more important ones. Many people are starting to consider elevators, and I'd like to mention to my friends out there that home elevators are not nearly as expensive as they once were, and that. For many people, it can mean the difference between staying in a home and being forced to move away. It helps to have closets that are built one on top of another, one floor above the other, because what people do when they add a home elevator is get rid of the closets and use those spaces as a shaft for the elevator.
And that's another universal design feature.
It's a universal design feature. Mm-hmm. And there are it makes the point that people of any age can use an elevator if they wish. And another thing you can do is add double banisters on stairways and visually accentuate the top step and the bottom step with a different color carpet, because the most falls don't happen in the middle of a stairway. They happen either at the top step or the bottom step. You'd be amazed.
What do you think about chair lifts?
I think that chairlifts are preferable to not having chairlifts, but I think that elevators are more intuitive than chairlifts for getting from one floor to another. Don't forget stairs. I'm going to close with an anecdote about stairs. When I was researching my book, I had a conversation with a homeowner, whose home is illustrated in the book, who is actually the director of geriatrics at a medical school in California, and had retired and was creating a home for himself. And big, beautiful stairway in the house. I said to him, a man like you who knows so much about geriatrics, what are you doing with a stairway in your own home? Isn't that dangerous? He says, it's going to be the only exercise I get. And I want to keep that stairway. My message to your viewers, don't be so frightened about aging in place that you forget to get exercise. And even in your own home, you can stay fit.
Well, Jeff Rosenfeld, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. We hope you'll come back.
I promise I will.
Unassisted living.
Evelyn and Jerry, thank you for having me.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Project Independence and You. This is the show by and for the older residents of our community. Project Independence is the Aging in Place initiative of the town of North Hempstead. I'm Evelyn Roth, your host. My co-host today is Jerry Peretzman, who is from Great Neck and who is an active Project Independence member. Welcome back, Jerry.
Welcome to you too, and welcome to our guest today.
Okay, I will introduce our next guest in a moment, but I want to tell our listeners something that I think is really exciting. For quite a while, we have been talking about the possibility of getting the old-time radio shows that we used to listen to when we were kids, before everybody had three television sets in the house. And we've been searching for those that we would be able to use and air, and we have found them. And one of the shows that we will be starting to air beginning next week in 15-minute segments is the Lux Radio Theater. Oh. And our first choice, folks, and this is really exciting, is one of the radio play of one of my favorite movies, The Birds. So please be sure and tune in next week when we will begin the replay of the Lux Radio Theater production of The Birds. And that will continue for 3 or 4 weeks, and then we'll move on come to the next show. So we're really happy that we've been able to access this material for our listeners, who will, of course, remember these wonderful radio programs. And if there are shows that you're interested in hearing, please call us. You can call 299-2030 to get us directly live, or you can call 311 within the town of North Hempstead, or 869-6311 outside of the town to reach Project Independence. Our next guest is Barry Edelson, and Barry is Director of Community Relations and Adult Education at the Roslyn School District. And I'm happy to say as well, and we'll be talking with Barry about this, we've just initiated a wonderful partnership with the facility which Barry runs. And Barry, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Barry, tell us about the program for adult education at the Roslyn Schools, focusing on things that would be of interest to our seniors.
My pleasure. The program is actually a very old program. Roslyn's had an adult education program for more than 60 years. In fact, we marked our 60th anniversary a couple of years ago. It's always been a large program. The last couple of years, it's grown tremendously. We had been somewhat smaller over the previous 5 to 10 years just because of a lack of space in Roslyn High School. As the enrollment had grown over the years, we had become squeezed for space. But last year, we were able to move into a new facility next door to Roslyn High School on Round Hill Road, which is we call the Roslyn Annex. It's actually the St. Mary's Parish Center, and so we're leasing the space from the local diocese, which is providing us with space to expand our day program in particular, which we've always had a day program, but we really didn't have as much space as we would have liked to run it in recent years. With the addition of this space, so we have a full day and evening program now, again, in Roslyn Adult Education. And in addition to that, this is the second year that we've partnered with the Herrick School District, so that Roslyn is now administering the program for Herrick's as well. So we're running programs both at the Roslyn Annex as well as the Herrick's Community Center. So we have a very large and growing program that's probably grown about 60 to 75% in the last 2 years.
Barry, give us an idea of the size of the actual size of the program. How many people you serve in each?
In the most recent semester, fall of this year, we had 1,600 registrations in the program, which is up from about 1,000 at the same time 2 years ago.
So that's both Roslyn and Herrick's.
That's
combined?
Roslyn and Herrick's combined. Yes.
Barry,
yes.
Can residents of the town who don't live in Roslyn enroll in the programs?
Anyone can enroll. We accept residents, non-residents. We do have different fees. A lower fee for someone who is a resident, and still lower fees for residents who are senior citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So very pleased that we have one of the few programs that offers a substantial discount, about 25% on almost every course that we offer. Mm-hmm. The only exceptions really are trips, where we have certain built-in expenses, but there's still a resident and a non-resident rate for those. But we do welcome. We have many people from across the town, from other communities, who take classes with us.
I notice you have catalog in front of you. How could a non-resident pick up the catalog?
Well, we do mail catalogs to all the residents of Herrick's and Roslyn, as well as some of the surrounding areas. And we have probably about 2,000 to 3,000 non-residents in the area who also receive a catalog because they've participated in the past. If someone hasn't participated in the past, they can go online to the school district website at www.roslynschools.org, and they can see the full catalog online. And they can, of course, call us also at 801-5091, and we'd be happy to mail anyone a catalog who'd like to get a catalog and have one in hand.
Or they can call 311 or 869-6311 if you don't happen to have a pencil or pen right now. And we will make sure that we get the information over to Barry and his group.
Now, some of the programs that we do run, we actually have programs and have for quite a few years that were geared specifically for senior citizens. We do have programs that are very popular among seniors, and I would say the most popular ones, we have a lot of people take advantage of our exercise program, which is very large. We have excess of 300 to 400 people every semester who are taking fitness programs, and a lot of seniors avail themselves of those programs, and they're all nominally priced.
Do you sort of run the range of fit? Do you do Tai Chi?
We have Tai Chi. In fact, we have a special Tai Chi called Tai Chi for Arthritis, which is something that came to us originally through the Arthritis Foundation, which is for older people with limited mobility. We have what we call non-impact aerobics. We have a course called Stretch and Tone. These are all geared for older residents specifically, although there are quite a few who are able, who take more strenuous aerobics classes and other types of fitness.
And many of these are during the day.
Many of them are during the day.
Many of our people don't drive at
most. Yes, that's what we're very pleased to be able to offer that, because we do get a lot of residents who come out during the day. And we start at about 8:30 in the morning, and we run all morning. We have fitness classes as well as in the evening. But many more people take advantage of it during the day than in the evening.
Give us an idea of what these would cost someone, and how often. Do you go once a week, twice a week?
Most classes are once a week, though we do offer some classes repeatedly, so that you could take, say, an aerobics class up to three times a week if you chose to.
Mm-hmm.
Though, as I say, when I say they're nominally priced, our exercise classes tend to be in the range of about, say, $50, probably at the low end. I don't think we have anything that's as high or really much higher than $100. And that would be, say, in the spring semester, it's a 12-week program. Mm-hmm. So it's really costing people the equivalent of about $6 or $7 per session to come and take a 1 or 1.5 hour exercise class.
Well, that's definitely a bargain.
Yes, yes.
Although Project Attendance, I must say, provides free fitness programs, but not at your center, because we don't want to compete with your wonderful program. Mm-hmm. But for information about our programs, you can call 311.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell us a little bit about the people who teach in the program?
Oh, sure. We have more than 50 instructors in the program, and many of them have been with us a long, long time. I'm thinking of several of our exercise teachers who teach. We have a teacher who's teaching aerobics, has been with the program 20 or 30 years. We have a teacher who teaches clay sculpture, which also a lot of senior residents take advantage of, who's been with the program for upwards of 30 years. We have many, many veterans of the program. We have a young who teaches the Tai Chi for arthritis and the stretch and tone and low-impact aerobics class, who specializes in instructing senior citizens and people who have limited mobility.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a wide range of people with experience. And in our catalog, we actually have little biographies of all of our instructors, so people can see that people have backgrounds that are relevant. And I think you find we have a lot of very interesting people, a lot of very varied backgrounds.
Jerry, tell me, have you ever thought about, or have you gotten into the whole area of virtual exercise programs?
We haven't, no.
Because we have been trying desperately to launch, excuse me, a virtual exercise program using Skype and webcams. Mm-hmm. And the program is targeted to folks who can't get to the centers, who need gentle fitness instruction, perhaps from a seated position, even people who are in a wheelchair, who want to remain as agile and mobile and flexible as possible. And so we learned of this wonderful technology, Skype, and we set up a class of six individuals around the town, and our fitness instructor was in our office, and we started out, and he turned on his screen, and there were the six folks, and he was able to see them, and they were able to see him, and everyone was all excited, and we got a lot of good publicity. And halfway through the show, the connection went out for one of our folks. And so we weren't able to have a staff person at each home, you know, to help them with the connection. We helped them with the initial connection. And so everybody had to wait while we talked the person on the phone through trying to get the connection up and running again. And then 10 minutes later, another connection went out. So the technology really promises a wonderful, wonderful service for seniors who are interested in doing this kind of exercise but cannot get out. But we haven't been able to hone it to the point yet where the program can be used extensively.
Well, it's a very intriguing idea.
And I'm wondering, maybe we can work together and
Yes. And as we expand our technology program, which has grown a lot, and we've invested a lot in our networks, that's something that we definitely should look at, because it would definitely be obviously beneficial to people.
We talked about trips. Mm-hmm. A lot of seniors are interested in trips where they don't have to drive and where there's guidance. Could you perhaps tell us a little bit about the programs you've offered in the past or offering now?
Sure. We have one of the most popular courses in the entire program is our art history tour, not art history, museum tours, where an very experienced art history lecturer brings a group into the city. We run five trips each on different days mm-hmm. of the week. Someone can sign up for five trips. And it's very convenient. It leaves from Christopher Morley Park. We start them up this spring. They'll be starting at the end of March again. And we go to mostly to Manhattan, but sometimes also to places like the Brooklyn Museum and some of the other museums in the area. The instructor lectures on the bus and gives everyone a background, and some of the places we go, she will lecture at the museum, and other places there are docents.
Barry,
that's a very popular program. We have probably upwards of 150 people who take advantage of that.
Let's talk more about this when we come back. We just have a few seconds left in this segment. We're talking with Barry Edelson, who is Director of Community Relations and Adult Ed at Roslyn. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Project Independence and You. I am your host, Evelyn Roth. My co-host today is Jerry Peretzman.
Good morning.
From Great Neck. Jerry is a very active member of Project Independence. And we're talking with Barry Edelson, who's the Director of Community Relations and Adult Education for Roslyn and also Herricks now. And Barry was telling us about trips, which
yes.
are very popular with the seniors in the town.
Yes. We try to make it as convenient as possible as far as transportation. Mm-hmm. Most of our trips will leave either from Christopher Morley Park mm-hmm. or from Roslyn High School. I was talking about the Art Museum Tour Series, which is very popular, mm-hmm. which draws upwards of 150 people every semester. Mm-hmm. Many of them, if not most, are our senior citizens who participate. We also do a theater trip every semester. And a lot of senior citizens avail themselves as well. Before I was director of adult ed, I thought about going on a trip in this way and taking a bus into the city, but I must say it's one of the most convenient ways. You can go in and see a show because the bus picks you up right at the high school, takes you right to the theater, drops you off, people go have dinner, mm-hmm. go to the theater. At the end, the bus is right outside, takes you right back to Roslyn High School. You don't have to worry about the
All
traffic.
All right, sign me up.
It's great.
Right.
Barry, did they get any kind of a discount?
Well, we get groups tickets through group sales, so we're not paying full price for tickets. Sometimes it can be still a little bit expensive, you know, in the range of $100 to $125
oh
for the
gosh.
Trip. But that includes, you know, the transportation as well.
Mm. I recently looked into tickets for Book of Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
I would need to take a second mortgage
yes,
on my
yes,
house.
Yes.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, they charge premium pricing for a lot of the shows now, so a lot of the good seats get taken up. But we really have the show that we're doing this spring is called Nice Work If You Can Get It. It's an old Gershwin show
uh-huh.
with Matthew Broderick and Kelly O'Hara.
Right.
We're going on May 1st, a Tuesday evening. And we also like to go on Tuesdays because there's an early curtain on Tuesdays. So this curtain is 7
you
and
do
it gets us home earlier.
You do matinees?
We don't generally do matinees.
No.
We generally do the evenings,
mm-hmm.
evening trips. And we find that so working people also are able to do it because we do get a mix of people going mm-hmm. going on the trips.
That's great. Right. Barry, tell us about your advisory committee.
Mm-hmm. Yes, one of the features of the program has been the Adult Education Advisory Committee, which has been in existence just about as long as the program has existed, which is more than 60 years. And residents from Roslyn, some of whom have participated for many decades as individuals on the committee. The last couple of years, we've been pleased to welcome some people from Herricks also on the committee and want people to know that we welcome people from our communities to volunteer if anyone wants to come on the committee. They give us guidance about the kinds of programs that people are interested in. They give us feedback from the community about how the programs are going. We meet about half a dozen times a year, usually during the day in the mornings. So convenient for residents who are at home to participate. So if anyone does want to participate, they can get in touch with us at 801-5091, and we'd be happy to invite you to a meeting.
Funny you should mention committees, advisory committees, because we, of course, at Project Independence have advisory committees throughout the town. And our Roslyn Advisory Committee said to us there is space at the Roslyn Adult Ed Program at the Annex, and Project Independence should try and access that space for our programming, our health
yes.
chats, and our nursing and social services. And so we embarked on that effort at the advice of our advisory committee. about, what, six, mm-hmm. 8 months ago?
Yeah, last fall we had a very good meeting at the Annex last fall.
Right.
To look at the space and to talk about how we might do that. And I think very soon you're going to embark on your first programs in the Annex.
Yes, we have given birth to a program here. And it only took about 8 months working with two bureaucracies, the Roslyn School District and the town of North Hempstead. So that was relatively quick.
Yes, I think it'll be beneficial for both of our programs because you're providing a service to the people in the community that we serve, and at the same time, it brings people into our facility so people can see the programs that we're running. So I think it'd definitely be beneficial to them and to both programs.
It's going to be a win-win.
Do you solicit people who'd like to give a course?
Absolutely.
Because we have a lot of seniors who have a lot of great life experience who might like to, impart some of this information. They get back in touch with you or the system.
Absolutely. In our catalog, we put a notice, and we did last year, asking people if they have some special area of expertise, they can get in touch with us, and we have a tear-off form. And we got quite a good response. We got several dozen responses from people, and some of them actually resulted in courses that we're running.
And they're all volunteers, and they don't get paid? Is that correct?
Well, most of the teachers do get paid, actually. They do. It's not, they don't get paid what they would get paid if they were running, say, an exercise. We get paid quite a bit more if they were working in a professional gym. But most of them are getting paid. Some people do provide the courses for service. For instance, one of the senior citizen classes that we offer almost every semester is an elder law workshop, which is run by an attorney who does it pro bono. She does it just as a service to the community. So we have quite a few courses like that as well.
Now, elder law is going to be the subject of our first Project Independence presentation at the Annex. Anne Margaret Carosa, who's a local elder law attorney and former assemblywoman, will be there, and I think it's March 2nd, but she's wonderful, folks. So if you're interested, call 311 to register. I'm not absolutely sure that that's the date, but I believe it's in early March. And we also hope to have our nurse there providing blood pressure checks 1 day a week, and our social worker will also be available in that building. Jerry, are you interested in teaching at the Roslyn Annex?
Only if the fee is right.
Jerry?
No, we seniors are strapped financially. But, no, seriously.
Jerry's a food scientist, right?
Right.
You could teach people all about horseradish.
Absolutely.
That's where you
No
work.
Commercials, though. But there are people who have interest and would like to teach.
Yes.
And and I think many of them would like to do it as a volunteer, not just looking for many financial reward.
Mm-hmm. So, we keep our prices very, very low by keeping our costs low. I mean, that's the goal. We want to make the program as accessible to as many people as we possibly can. The lower our costs are to run a class, the less we have to charge people to run it, to participate, and that's to everyone's benefit.
As I understand it, too, that the program, in effect, is self-sustaining, so
yes.
There's no charge to
our
taxpayers.
It is our goal every semester, and we price everything in such a way that we're covering all of our costs.
Mary, we talked about fitness programs. We talked about your trips. What are some of the other offerings that are popular with the older residents of the town?
I would say the most popular offering would probably be computer classes.
Mm.
We offer quite a few during the day, in the evening. We have a computer lab right in the annex. We also, after hours, make use of some of the computer labs at Roslyn High School. To do some of the more sophisticated software programs that we can teach. But we have a basic A to Z computers for people who, and I would say a good proportion are senior residents who take advantage of that because we have a teacher who is wonderful. She's been with the program for more than 20 years, and she also specializes in teaching people who have very limited skills, and she's exceedingly patient, and everyone has a good experience taking classes with her.
So if you're totally computer phobic and you don't know how to turn it on,
yes.
and the mouse scares you to death, this is the class.
I would say one of the most common questions we get is about those courses. People call up and say, do I take the beginner class? Do I take the intermediate class? And we say, can you turn the computer on? Have you ever used email? Can you type? I mean, if you have really limited skills, you can start that A to Z class, and you'll learn quite a bit and overcome that phobia.
I know. In our generation, it's difficult to overcome that resistance. And we have done surveys that show that under 40% of our seniors in the town of North Hempstead own computers. And of those who do own computers, just about a third use the internet. So we are always encouraging people to learn. It's such a wonderful way to connect with, especially if someone is homebound, to connect with the community, the world outside, the grandkids in California,
absolutely,
the local supermarket, the you can get your pharmaceuticals through the internet.
Well, we tried people how to use email, to use the internet, to upload or download their photos on the internet. And we have other courses also that are more specialized that people can take in digital photography and digital photo editing. And again, they can also learn to use more complex programs if they have more advanced skills, or if they reach that level, like Microsoft Excel and some of the more complicated programs.
And they go on the WCWP.org website and listen to the show, or they can go on the TONH projectindependence.net website and learn all about Project Independence and all our services. So we really encourage all our folks to become, if not computer literate, to take the first tiny steps toward learning how to have basic computer skills. Barry, in the minute or so that we have left, are there any other offerings that are particularly geared for our...
Well, one thing I want to particularly mention also is that we have in Roslyn for many, many years what we call the Gold Card Program, which is for senior residents, which we now also extend to residents of the Herricks community, since they're now partners with us in adult education. And people sign up, so when they sign up for a course, we'll assign them a gold card number, and they will be able to use that forever. To when they sign up for courses to get the discount for our classes. But it also entitles people to participate in some other programs. For instance, we open up we have special performances of the shows at Roslyn High School and Roslyn Middle School just for senior residents, and we always make tickets available for them free on the matinee performance, usually on a Thursday afternoon. In fact, there's one coming up, I think, just next week at the middle school and one in March at the high school, and those are always really terrific to see and well-attended. I think our senior residents really appreciate that program.
Jerry,
well,
do you have a quick name for the 30
is
seconds?
Is there any one exotic and off the beaten path course you'd recommend for a senior?
Off the beaten path.
Yeah, something different. Yeah, you know, not white bread.
Well, you know, we have things that are more academic. We have a wonderful archaeology class, which I think people really enjoy. We have a teacher, again, one of our veteran teachers, has been with us for
Barry,
decades.
I'm going to have to cut you off because we have to break now. But thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Back again and talk more.
It was my pleasure.
Evelyn Roth for Project Independence and you. Please stay tuned.
The following is a presentation of the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence and WCWP. Welcome to Project Independence and You.
Welcome back to Project Independence and You. I'm your host, Evelyn Roth. With me today, my co-host is Jerry Peretzman of Great Neck, and Jerry is an active Project Independence member. Welcome, Jerry.
Good morning, and glad to be here.
Okay. I'm going to have a lot of fun with this next segment, folks, and with our next guest, because for the past few years, our next guest has been interviewing me about stories related to Project Independence. He is a local reporter, and for the next 20, 25 minutes or so, I'm going to be interviewing him. And he is Rich Tedesco. He's written some wonderful stories about our programs and services, and he is with Blank Slate Media. Welcome, Rich.
Thank you, everyone. It's nice to be here.
It's great to see you. Tell us about, first of all, about Blank Slate Media. What exactly is it?
Well, we're a group of three weekly papers in the town of North Hempstead, the Williston Times, the New Hyde Park Herald Courier, and the Great Neck News.
Okay. And you write for all three papers, or do your stories usually appear in all three?
Sometimes, but I primarily write for the Williston and New Hyde Park papers.
Okay. And I know that you cover town hall.
Yes.
The town board meetings.
Yes.
And that must be a lot of fun, especially when they break up at 1 o'clock in the morning.
And you have a deadline the next day.
Right. Well, that's one word. No, that's can get to be a little bit tedious when those meetings go on, frankly. And I don't think I'm revealing anything in saying that.
we met at the Romeo's one day. You were out, and
that's right. Right.
A report on retired older men eating out. To get that right, and well written, and I think we all, members of it, really appreciated the nice job you did for us.
Well, that's nice of you to say.
Yeah.
Rich, how did you get into reporting? You know, I must tell you that in my youth, when Manhattan was a prairie, as my aunt used to say, I wanted to be a journalist, and I minored in journalism at school. Somehow I kind of got off that track when my father told me that teaching was the only career for a woman. So I ended up teaching for 3 days before I found a job writing for a public relations outfit. But I've always loved journalism, and I've always loved working with reporters. How did you get into the business?
Well, I got interested in writing, at least in the journalistic context, when I was in college, and it just sort of took its course from there. I mean, back then, one of my one of my intentions was not to have a regular 9-to-5 job. So, and reporting was well suited to, you know, the skill I had in writing, and it's something different every day.
Did you write for your college paper?
Yes, I did.
Hmm. And are you a Long Islander, Rich, or where did you go to school?
Yeah, I grew up in Garden City.
Oh.
Went to Garden City High and went to Bard College upstate. Hmm.
So tell us about how you worked your way up to reporting for Blank Slate Media and covering the town.
Well, it's sort of like coming full circle. I started out in this business covering local communities, or a local community. It was Garden City, in fact. So I've sort of just come back around to doing that after a number of years. I spent a lot of years working for trade publications in the city, the cable TV business and the TV business in general, before I came to this job.
Well, tell me... How do you like covering local government? I mean, do you find that local government really works? As an objective observer, I've been involved in government for so many years that I'm really not objective anymore. But I like to think that that we do a lot of good, and yet many reporters seem to take such a cynical view and are kind of looking for the negative stuff. But you don't, though. You really seem to cover the news as it is.
Well, yeah, that's a good way of... That's exactly what I try to do. And the best answer to the question you asked about whether government works is to say sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it obviously.
Yeah.
But certainly in the case of your program... I think it's a prime example of government working in the right direction.
Wow, I was hoping you would answer that way. That was just the way you rehearsed it, right?
Right. Rich, this was not...
how do you find out about a Project Independence as you go about? Do people volunteer and say that, gee, I was helped by this, or it's a great thing that the town was doing, or...
Yes, sometimes it occurs that way, that someone has a story to tell. Otherwise, I've been taking my cues from, you know, the developments that as they've been revealed about the program.
We haven't been doing lots of issuing of press releases, but Rich sort of picks up on when he's at the town board meetings, we'll have a resolution on the calendar seeking approval from the town council to institute one program or another, and he studies that town calendar, and then he'll call and he'll say, tell me about this Romeo's program. you know, or tell me about this Help at Home program, right. And I try to do that. And it's been a lovely relationship. I don't want to say partnership because our job is not to be partners, and your job is to be an objective observer. And mine is to tell you all the good stuff, right. Not necessarily the bad stuff. What else have you covered as a reporter other than Town of North Hempstead?
Well, in this job, it's a matter of covering things at the local level, pretty much as that is. Covering the Town of North Hempstead, I cover village and school boards in the Williston's, Mineola, and New Park. So
what? I don't know if this is a fair question, but in your entire career, what's been your favorite story that you've written?
I hope it's about Project Independence.
No. Let's not put that pressure on him.
No, it's not. But it is. It is about. Well, it's certainly about senior citizens in any case. There are a couple of them. I can't really narrow it down beyond saying that I had an experience when I was first working for the Williston Times to write a story about John DeVanzo, who's a World War II veteran and a former deputy mayor in Mineola. And he was on a destroyer that was sunk 2 days after the Normandy invasion off the coast of Normandy. If he hadn't been coming on board for his shift that morning, he might not have been there to tell me the story. He's 90 years old, and he's really, aside from the fact that he had that experience in the war, he's really been a powerful force in helping the community of many all in different causes. That was one of my favorite stories, but it also reminds me, I had occasions years ago to interview four of the guys who were involved in the Doolittle raid on Tokyo.
Really?
Yeah, and that's an interesting experience. Well, any kind of a wartime story is interesting because, you know, frequently, these men were in situations where they didn't think they were going to survive that circumstance. And that was true for these men because at a certain point in the flight, they'd reached a point where the bombers that had left from an aircraft carrier in the Pacific didn't have enough fuel to get back to their ships after a certain point on that raid. And that's a rather heavy consequence to contemplate. Right. So it's interesting to speak to people who've been in that sort of circumstance.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, going forward, are you going to be covering the presidential debates at Hofstra? Is that something that there's a local slant on?
I don't know. We probably will. Yeah.
We have yet press credentials and all, is that an issue, or
I can't say sitting here. I hope it wouldn't be an issue. Yeah.
Jerry, when we did our show on veterans on Veterans Day, you were on the show.
Yes, I was.
You
right,
were a,
right.
Or a vet of
right of WW2. Right.
I was just stunned that so many of the gentlemen that we were talking to that day had gone into the service at the age of 17.
Well, I'm another one, right.
And you were one of them. And right. I think about the fact that I have a grandson who's like 16 years old, and I just can't imagine what that would be like.
Well, I have a 70-year-old grandson. I can't imagine him going into the Army.
Right.
I can't, you know, it seems like a overwhelming experience in retrospect, but we're all hanging in, and I guess there are a lot of very fascinating stories. I know one of the people that you introduced, John Weaver,
yes,
who's now living in Roslyn, had a fascinating experience as a captain in the 10th Mountain Division, and I got to talk to him, and he was telling me about the towns he, quote, visited, unvisited when he was in the Army, which I visited as a tourist. I can tell the difference in terms of our life experiences there. But I was going to ask you, do you look for stories about seniors, those seniors with interesting stories get in touch with the paper? And
Well,
you're looking for news, I guess, more so than anything else.
Yeah.
Rather than feature stories.
Right. Well, it happens both ways. Sometimes, you know, people do call in or somebody will contact us about someone who has an interesting story to tell. In the case of several of the veterans I've had the privilege of interviewing, I'm in contact with the commanders of the local VFW posts, mm-hmm. and they tell me about, you know, guys who have interesting stories.
Okay, we have a few seconds left. We're talking with Rich Tedesco, who's a local reporter with Blank Slate Media covering the town of North Hempstead. And I've got many more questions I want to ask him because he's asked me so many over the years. So we'll be right back. Please stay tuned to you. And welcome back to Project Independence and You, the town that's the town, the program that is by and for the older residents of our town, the town of North Hempstead and surrounding areas. And we try to present information that is of interest or entertaining segments. Focused on the things that interest the old residents of our town. And each week I have a co-host drawn from among the ranks of the Project Independence members around town. And this week that co-host is Jerry Peritzman.
Good morning.
From Great Neck. And Jerry, you have been very active in Project Independence almost since the beginning. And we really appreciate that. And our guest is Rich Tedesco, who was a reporter with Blank Slate Media, which we have learned publishes three local weekly newspapers that cover the town of North Hempstead. And Rich has often interviewed me about Project Independence, so it's kind of fun now interviewing him on the radio. And we're talking about covering local government, Rich, so tell us more about that experience.
Well, it's a varied experience depending on, you know, the particular body that you're covering or the circumstance. This time of year we're covering a lot of school board meetings because they're beginning to sort out their budgets. And those can be very intense and revealing meetings because people's passions go with the school system, if their kids are attending the school system, and also, you know, they have a concern about the costs. So there's nothing that you cover that's on a more direct level in terms of the way that it affects people involved.
The direct impact on the lives of people. Do you get many seniors who come to those board meetings?
Well, yeah, you know, it's like any other type of meetings. There seem to be a certain core of people who show up for these meetings, and yeah, there are seniors who go to those meetings.
So covering local government, of course, includes covering the school board meetings. And when are the budgets voted on?
They'll be voted on in May.
In May. Mm-hmm. And so they're starting to have hearings and meetings about the budgets?
Right. Well, anticipating the effect of the tax cap, 2% tax cap this year, they've been starting the process a little earlier to explain what's going to happen in some of the school districts.
You sense that it's going to be controversial this year, or just about the same as any year?
Well, for some school districts, like the Herrick School District, it's a more difficult process because they have to make some tough choices about either cutting back programs or cutting staff.
Now, I'm reading that some of the local districts, or was it local municipalities, have voted to override the tax cap, and they're able to do that?
Yes. Really, that's like a safety valve, as it's been described by the officials in Williston Park, one of the villages that recently adopted it. They just don't want to take a risk that they could miscalculate something and exceed the tax cap accidentally, which is actually a cap. Some people don't understand on the levy, or the tax levy in the case of the school boards.
So it's not on the actual size of the budget, but what they can charge per $100, so to speak.
Right, and there's normally a pretty close correlation between the
two. I was going to ask you another question related to local government, and that is special districts. I know there's been a lot of talk in years gone by about consolidations. What sense do you get going out meeting in these meetings as to whether there's going to be opposition to consolidations, or whether that's going to be pushed off forever, or whether it might well happen?
Well, people have talked for years about the consolidation of government services, or consolidation of the kind you're talking about, or school boards. But that's where it's remained. It's
just talk.
Well, it seems like communities really have a vested interest in controlling their school districts in a local, very localized way. I mean, compare the number of 56 school districts in Nassau, and how many school districts are there in New York City? It's a different structure. It's a different educational structure.
What about things like volunteer fire departments, water, and stuff like that that we really don't see day to day? You think if there were to be any consolidation, that might happen at that level? I mean, there's less emotion. Is there less emotion there?
Well, that's a likely candidate, let's say, but and logical in some cases, because you literally have many fire departments that are just down the street from one another. I mean, but that works in a positive way in that they can support, these different units can support each other if there is a major occurrence. But you asked about passionate. Yeah, there's no stronger subculture, I think, in Nassau County than volunteer fire departments. And they all have a very strong identity in terms of their own traditions and history, and that's a tough one to see.
But compromise between consolidation and the proliferation of special districts that we have now that contribute so much to the high taxes, and that is consortia or pooling of things like purchasing, for instance, so that if you have a huge entity of 54 school districts purchasing together, obviously they're going to recognize savings by virtue of the scale. And so there are ways to save money by cooperating and working together and looking for economies of scale, I think.
Yeah, it's been a big issue with seniors because many of them are on fixed income. And essentially, even if things go up 2% a year, it's 2% out of the fixed income. And I think there's a lot of concern there about holding back on these expenses if possible.
And, seniors understand how tied the value of their homes is to the wonderful schools that we have
right.
in Long Island. So it's always a struggle for them.
The cap is a great idea. The problem is that, everything's in a state of chaos financially with the state as they invoke this. And pension costs and health costs are the main problems for school boards to cope with.
What's the biggest story you ever covered?
Well, I've covered I covered the Time Warner AOL merger when I was working in that field. I guess that qualifies as a large
big story.
In the context of the reporting I've done here.
Story,
right? Yeah, well, and everybody had these. That's a funny story, actually, because everybody had these extravagant ideas about what that corporate marriage was going to mean. You know, this idea of taking a traditional media company with those assets of films and the other things that they had, and merging it with a new media company. It seemed like logically like just a dream. A dream merger, but it didn't work out. It ultimately didn't work out because of the clash in corporate cultures between that traditional company and AOL, which is now still sort of
struggling, right?
Struggling, yes.
Mergers are always tough, whether it's at that level, at the school district.
Right, right.
On a local level, I think the biggest story I've covered since I've been working my current job was the election between Jack Martins, who upset Craig Johnson in that Senate race, and the story that came out of that as things went on, because as a direct result of that election, the Democratic majority in the Senate decided to rescind a number of grants. To the tune of $8.5 million that Johnson had commitments on, and that threw a lot of people's plans into a difficult state, because in many cases the deal was you went ahead and did the project and paid for it and they got reimbursed,
so
they were sitting there with projects of $100,000 or $200,000 they'd put out the money for expecting.
Oh.
It was coming back.
Rich, as you go around town, what are the principal issues that you see and hear seniors talking about these days?
Well, I think you could probably tell me, Jerry, but it's the usual, primarily concerns about the costs of government and services.
Mm. So they're looking for ways in which towns villages can be more efficient, get more bang for the buck, stuff like that, keep costs down.
Sure, and I guess everybody thinks that every bureaucracy is in some way top-heavy or, pads its budget in some way. Which may or may not be true.
When you think about the portion of the tax burden that goes to town government, it's really ridiculous because it's such a tiny portion of the tax burden. Most of the money, of course, goes to the schools. But in the minute that we have left, Rich, I know that in addition to being a writer, and I'm sorry I didn't get to ask you if you're working on a book, because every writer I know is writing a book, you're a musician. We have a minute.
Yes, I am. I play piano and I sing and I have a...
You sing?
Mm. Yes.
I did not know that. Wow. We have to have you come and sing for us seniors.
Well, okay. That would be fine.
Okay. Rich Tedesco,
for you and
Blank
the seniors
Slate
both,
Media,
right?
Thank you so much for being with us today. It's illuminating to get some insights into the story behind the stories.
And I always read your column, The Great Neck News.
And please stay tuned for our segment. This is Evelyn Roth for Project Independence and you. Welcome back to Project Independence and you. That was fun, interviewing somebody who always interviews me. Jerry, did you enjoy that segment?
I certainly did, and it's good to get the local view beyond what we see from our own eyes and hear through our own ears.
Jerry Peretzman is my co-host today. Jerry is from Great Neck, and he's a very active Project Independence member. And our guest, our next guest and our final guest for today is Aline Rudzinski, who is a physical therapist at North Shore LIJ. And Aline is a very popular lecturer with our seniors. She does some health chats. She talks about a wide range of issues. Welcome, Aline.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit about your area of work.
Well, at North Shore LIJ, I work at STARS Manhasset, which is Sports Therapy and Rehabilitation Services.
Sports therapy?
Yes. Okay. But there we treat everything from sports injuries, orthopedic surgery, balance problems, neuromuscular issues, and we actually have vestibular therapy at the Manhasset site as well.
The what?
Vestibular therapy. It's when people have vertigo and dizziness problems.
Spell that word.
Vestibular?
Yeah.
V-E-S-T-I-B-U-A-R.
Okay, I wouldn't know if that was right or not.
I think it's right.
That's a new word for me.
Right.
Do you know that word?
Definitely
Jen?
Right.
Okay. So what are the most frequent types of issues that you see with our older residents?
Well, you know, the main thing is fall prevention. That's my big idea for therapy is I'm trying to prevent people from falling and getting injured and things like that. Because after a fall, people can sustain so many different types of injuries. A lot of people then have to stay in rehab centers and can't return home to an independent living style. So we want to prevent the falls from happening before they occur.
So as important as the therapy is, obviously the prevention is the number one step. What
exactly
sort of things do you suggest for older people in terms of, you know, do this first in your home? Look for what first?
Right. Well, in the home, there's a lot of different things you can do. For example, like floors. Don't use wax on your floors. You don't ever want to step up onto a chair to go get something. You know, if it's on a high shelf, try to get someone to help you. Or
I
use
have
a
daughter
stool
for that.
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect.
Or
you use a younger family member.
311, and we will send somebody over to
help.
Yeah,
to help.
Right.
And throw rugs. A lot of people trip on throw rugs, so either getting rid of throw rugs altogether or tame down the edges. Cleaning up spills as soon as they occur so you don't, you know, forget you spilled something, then come back and slip on it. With the old Asian, health issues are very important in regards to fall prevention, because if you take more than four medications, you're more likely to fall. Also, people who have bladder or bowel issues, you want to make sure you go to the bathroom regularly so you're not rushing for the bathroom and more likely to fall that way as well.
So there are a lot of very simple things you can do to make life safe and extend your life and have a happy full life.
Exactly. That's right.
Well, you're the second guest today to mention throw rugs or scatter rugs. Our first guest, Jeff Rosen, who's a gerontologist, also said, you know, either get rid of the rug or tape it down so that you're not tripping over it.
Right.
And we have had people on the show who are anti-clutter experts.
Yes.
Who also point out that clutter is a major cause of falling in the home.
Right. One thing I do tell people when I give lectures is to try to get rid of magazines or newspapers that pile up. Because that's a big source of clutter, is you're more likely to trip over them, and you never know if you have a very high stack of them if they could fall into your walking path. Another thing with clutter is animals. Pets get in the way, so if you have more clutter around, there's less area for your pets to sleep or to walk around, and you're more likely to trip over them while you're walking.
And we know that falling in the home is a major cause of injury to our older folks. And we at Project Independence are always, we do articles and temptations about fall prevention. But if the fall occurs and you sustain an injury,
right?
What are the most common kinds of injuries that are sustained?
Fractures?
Can I back off for just a second? If you fall, what did you do? first as an older person?
Well, if you fall, you have to kind of assess how you're feeling at the moment. Mm. If there's someone there who, you know, is able to help you and you feel that you're able to get up, I usually recommend people crawl over to a couch and then kind of get up into a kneeling position by the couch and then try to push yourself up onto the couch. If the person who's with you is strong enough to assist you to do that, have them do so. If the other person who's with you isn't strong enough, have them call a neighbor or, you know, 911, whatever you need to do. My grandfather, who's 96, fell a few years ago and had to crawl to the phone himself. Now he has a cell phone that is programmed, 911 is programmed right into the cell phone. But a lot of people use the bracelets or the necklaces that are the alarms that connect to 911. And I think that's great for people, independent living, but you're still protected.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. Yeah.
And there are now so many more sophisticated monitoring devices on the market that it's just amazing. I recently did an interview with a woman who specializes in studying technology for aging in place.
Oh, that's great.
And the kinds of things that are available that would allow a daughter living on the West Coast to monitor when her mom living in the town of North Hempstead takes her meds.
Wow.
Electronically.
That's great.
It's just amazing. So back to my question about most common.
Right. Yeah, I'd say fractures are quite common. They're twice as high rate for women to fracture after a fall versus a man. I've had people ask me about hip fractures with falls, and past studies have shown that it's possible that with osteoporosis, people's hip fracture first, and that causes them to fall. So they can't really prove that cause and effect specifically, but it's pretty common with that. But just general bruises, abrasions, you know, bumps and bruises tend to be the most common type of, you know, smaller injuries that occur.
And I noticed that one of your specialties here listed is foot and ankle therapy injuries.
Right. I treat patients who have foot and ankle injuries. I actually also work with dancers, so I see a lot more of that in that population versus in the older population. But with when I'm working with senior citizens, it's always important for people to check the skin care on your feet. So I tell people to use a mirror to look and see if there's any breakdown of the skin on your feet, because sometimes with diabetes or other medical conditions, you have decreased sensation in your feet and you don't notice if there's a breakdown in the skin, and that'll change the way that you walk, and you'll be more likely to fall if you don't have good foot care going on. So
are there exercises that people can do to strengthen their feet and ankles? Because as we get older, that seems to be an area that presents problems, foot pain or arthritis or what have you. So what do you recommend?
Well, the most, you know, a simplistic thing to do is what we call ankle pumps, and that's just picking your toes up and down like you're tapping your foot or stepping on a gas pedal and picking your foot back up off the gas pedal. That also is great with getting swelling out of the legs too, so you're strengthening the ankle muscles and you're getting the blood flow back up and down through the body. I also recommend that people make circles with their toes or write the letters of the alphabet with their toes, and that gets your ankle moving in all the different planes of motion that it does.
That's interesting. I'm looking at your feet and seeing if you're demonstrating.
I was doing the ankle pumps, maybe not the alphabet.
Show me the ankle pump. How does that work again?
So the ankle pump, your heel can stay on the floor, and you just pick your toe up and down off the floor, like he's doing over here.
Okay, that's pretty simple, but an effective way of strengthening.
It is. And they even give this to people after surgeries to help get the blood flow through the legs to prevent blood clots also. So it does a lot of different things. That simple exercise does a lot of different things.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to be doing that now while I'm doing the show.
Right. So all these things you could do at home without any supervision.
Very easy.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. But I do recommend if you have any medical problems that you ask your doctor about exercise before performing things.
Well, what about balance, gait disorders?
So balance problems can occur from anything. It can be a vestibular problem. So your vestibular system is inside your inner ear.
Here's that word again. Okay.
That's right. It's a tricky thing. And what the vestibular system does is basically it tells the body where it is in space. So is it moving? Is it turning? Forwards, backwards, things like that. So if there's a problem with the vestibular system, your balance can be off. Also, if your vision is poor or you have other problems like you have glaucoma or macular degeneration, your vision plays a part in your balance. So if you have poor vision, you might not be able to balance as safely either. And then again, with the bottoms of the feet, the nerve endings in the bottoms of the feet help you sense what surface you're standing on, whether it's solid ground or grass, or if you're, you know, walking on a towel in the bathroom versus a you know, a tile, something like that. So if that's decreased because of diabetes, these are other things that are called neuropathy, which is decreased sensation in the feet. You won't be able to balance as easily with that either.
And what are there exercises to improve your balance?
There's a lot of different types of exercises. Usually with therapy, we start with something called Romberg exercises, and that's when someone stands with their feet directly together and their arms either down at their sides or across their chest, and they try to stand there for 30 seconds or a minute, depending on you know, how good their balance is at that point in time. And then to make it harder, we'd have them close their eyes or stand on a foam mat or a pillow. But those types of things I wouldn't try without someone supervising you.
To catch you.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have any suggestions about lighting at a home to make sure you don't trip when you get up at night,
right,
for example? What sort of things should someone have around their bed, for example?
Right. Well, I love the clap-on lights. So if you're getting out of bed to go to the bathroom, you can clap on. And I just bought my grandfather the greatest nightlight. It's a sensor. It has a sensor component to it. And as soon as he gets up from his chair in his den, it turns on in his hallway, so he can get into his bedroom, into his bathroom, into his kitchen, and it's very, very bright. It's great, and so I think that
that's called sensor
light.
It's
a sensor nightlight. I could get you information on that.
Good. Maybe like. We call it.
Yeah, and it wasn't too expensive.
Aileen Rajinsky, physical therapist at North Shore LIJ. You've given us such great information. Can you stay with us for the next segment?
Sure, no problem. Right.
Now I know why our seniors enjoy hearing you so much. This is Evelyn Roth for Project Independence, and you stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Aileen and more tips. Hello and welcome back to Project Independence and You. This is Evelyn Roth, your host. My co-host today is Jerry Peretzman.
Good morning again.
And we've been talking with Aileen Rajinsky, who is a physical therapist at North Shore LIJ. Aileen does a lot of educational presentations for our seniors. She's got some wonderful information. We don't like to do a lot of statistics on the show, but Aileen has a few that are relatively new and have to do with bathroom safety.
Right. So the Center for Disease Control just put out a new report. It was actually from 2008, but they finally have it all together. And that people over the age of 65 are twice as likely to have a fall injury occur from a fall in the bathroom versus younger populations. Mm. And in people over 85 years of age, it's more likely to be on or near the toilet versus like the bathtub or shower area. So what it seems like to me, my perception would be that people are having difficulty getting up from toilets. Sometimes toilet seats are low. So whenever you can get a seat adjustment for your toilet seat, they make them, they can go up to 6 inches, I believe, maybe more than that. And putting grab bars near the toilet, something to hold on to push up to get back to standing after you've gone to the bathroom.
Right. And people can get assistance with those home modifications by calling 311 or 869-6311.
Yeah. If you're going to replace your toilets, there is a senior adult toilet that we've put in our house that raises it up almost to chair
great
level and makes
that's
it very
great
comfortable, so you don't have to bend down or get up and get down with the same degree of difficulty that you might experience as you get older.
Right. That's excellent because the muscles change as we age, and if people don't exercise as normally as they used to, it'll be harder for the muscles to help push you up from that sitting position at a low seat height. So that's great if they make those higher seats that you can have installed now.
And of course, there are also issues with getting in and out of tubs.
Yes.
And we find a lot of our seniors like to modify the bathroom so that they have a walk-in shower with a seat in it,
right,
or even a walk-in tub,
right,
rather than the traditional bathtub. And there are programs, and some of them will depend upon your income level, but there are funding programs to make these accessibility modifications to the home.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I usually tell people, even if you don't have the money to do those things, there's some simple cheap things that you can do, just like putting sticky adhesives down on the bottom of the shower or the tub, and they're slip resistant, so you're less likely to slide in there. Install grab bars in the shower or the tub. That's not that expensive versus doing a complete bath or shower remodel. Don't hold on to the towel rods. People love to do that, but it's only meant to hold the weight of a towel,
right,
not a person. So, but even, you know, just not having a small bath mat right outside the shower or the tub. I mean, there's ones that have adhesive versus just putting a towel down, with which a lot of people do. So just simple little things like that that are pretty inexpensive to do that still will prevent you from having any injuries.
You know, even if you have a non-skid surface in your tub, it does wear out in time.
That's true.
And you can buy sprays that put effectively renew it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very easy, inexpensive thing to do.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And if you're someone who's handy, you know, you can make little modifications like this on your own. Or like you said, you have your daughter to help you with things. I mean, always ask friends and family members or neighbors, anybody who can help you out.
Aileen, what's performing arts therapy?
I work with dancers and musicians at Broadway shows in my part-time.
Are any of them seniors?
I have in the past worked with some seniors. Not recently, but a few years ago, I did work with seniors. And it's amazing, even on Broadway, Broadway's a young person's game. And seeing patients who are 20 years old versus 40 years old is a big difference on Broadway. I mean, by the time they're in their 40s, they're a little older for that type of job. So to see someone in their 60s or 70s on Broadway, to me, is always fun because you have they have such a different perspective on how they have to care for their bodies in order to do 8 performances a week. I mean, they're doing the same thing for about 2 hours for every show, and it's usually 8 shows a week. So they really have to be careful about exercising and diet and keeping themselves healthy and to be able to go on.
I would love to know the secrets of people like Elaine Stritch or Betty White,
right,
or Tony Bennett.
Right.
They're
amazing.
Just amazing.
Yeah,
in
they really are.
Late 80s and 90s, they just keep going on.
Yep, I agree.
I hope I'm there when I get there. We said we would talk a little bit about neck and back pain, which is also very common with seniors.
Right.
What causes neck and back pain? Is it always kind of arthritic if it's not an injury?
Right. As we age, people tend to get spinal stenosis, and that closes down in the vertebrae and pinches on nerves and can cause back pain. That's why a lot of people tend to stoop over to relieve the pain. So you see people walking around stooped over. It's more of a
sit up straight.
That's right. All of us sit up when we say that.
That's true.
But the stooping over actually relieves some of the stress on the nerves in the spine when you have stenosis. But it's not the right thing to do necessarily in the long run because it affects your posture and you're more likely to learn to walk bent over, and that throws off your center of gravity and makes you more likely to have a loss of balance. So we treat people with things like that at physical therapy, with heat and electric stimulation and exercises to try to alleviate those symptoms and keep you feeling good.
We were talking a little bit about exercising in the pool.
Right.
Some of us are lucky enough to belong to gyms that have pools, and certainly in the nicer weather, some of us are fortunate enough to have pools in the backyard. some of us have wonderful son-in-laws who take care of the pools. Tell us a little bit about water exercise.
Right. So what I love about water therapy or water exercises is the buoyancy of the water kind of eliminates gravity, so there's less stress on the joints, but the resistance of the water gives you something to kind of strengthen your muscles with. So instead of being on land and using a weight or some sort of resistive elastic band or something like that, in the water you have the push against the water to give you some resistance. So it's allowing you to take the stress off the joints, but build the muscle strength at the same time. So you can do walking in the water, swimming, standing exercises for your legs, squats, holding on to the edge of the pool wall. I know some people do arm exercises in the water. It's if you can, but I think it's great for most people.
Those of us who live in North Hempstead, many of us do a lot of driving around.
Right.
Is there anything you do in driving that is good for you?
Right. Well, I usually tell people at red lights to move their neck around, bend it side to side, or turn it side to side a little bit to try to get your neck loosened up, or to even pull your shoulders up and back. That helps with your posture. So things like that. I usually give leg exercises in the car because you're more likely to step off of the gas pedal or the brake pedal. So usually just neck and shoulder things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, great. Aileen, is there anything that we haven't covered that you think is important?
Just stay active. Talk to your doctors about exercises that are appropriate for you. Make the modifications in the home that you can, because we don't want to see you in the physical therapy office because you're injured. We want to see you there because you're bringing your friend who had something else going on. So we like to see you on the street.
We don't have a lot of time left, but I do want to ask you. I've been reading, there seems to be a lot of controversy about these osteoporosis medications, especially these long-acting drugs that people are taking. Do you have any information or opinion?
Now, I would talk to a medical doctor about that. With physical therapy, while we do monitor what medications people are taking, we don't make recommendations on medications. So I would definitely talk to the medical doctor about that.
Okay. Always good advice. Aileen Roginski, physical therapist at North Shore LIJ, thank you so much for being with us today. You did a great job with some wonderful information. And I want to thank my co-host, Jerry Peretzman. Jerry, I know you're going to be back. We will be working with you again. In the little bit of time we have left, I want to remind our listeners that our St. Francis Hospital Community Outreach Program Cardiac Van is still making the rounds in the town of North Hempstead and will be at the Sid Jacobson JCC on Tuesday, February 21st from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. and will be at Clinton Martin Park on Tuesday, February 28th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can go to the van, get screened for your cardiac history, blood pressure. They'll do a simple blood test for cholesterol and diabetes, and they will give you some terrific information and make referrals as needed. Please stay with us next week. Tune in. We're going to have, as I mentioned before, The Birds, Alfred Hitchcock's wonderful film, in the radio play from the Lux Radio Theater, which we all loved to listen to many, many, many years ago. We'll have the first segment of The Birds. We will have a terrific interview with Lori Orloff, who is the expert on aging in place technology. You will not believe some of the things that are coming down the pike technologically. I want to thank the folks at 88.1 FM WCWP, Dan Cox, Director of Broadcasting, and Joe Zeta, Chris Maffei, Victoria Piddle, Kara Frank. I want to thank our producers, the fabulous Christina Fennell and Michelle Stern. I want to urge you to call 311 or 869-6311 if you need any additional information about anything that you've heard today. If you missed the show, go to our website, www.tonhprojectindependence.net. This is Evelyn Roth for Project Independence, and you have a fabulous week.